groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO at the Clinton Street Theater for our monthly movie screening night. This month, KBOO proudly presents Alice's Restaurant, the film based on a song based on Arlo Guthrie's 1965 Thanksgiving Day. Alice's Restaurant will screen Wednesday, November 26th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information about the film at KBOO at the Clinton series can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under the community events.
You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
KBOO at the Clinton, a monthly film screening at the Clinton Street Theater, is proud to show Five Broken Cameras on Thursday, December 11th at 7 p.m. The first ever Palestinian film to be nominated for Best Documentary Feature, Five Broken Cameras is a deeply personal first-hand account of life and nonviolent resistance in a West Bank village surrounded by Israeli settlements. Shot by Palestinian farmer Ahmad Burnat, who brought his first camera in 2005 to record the birth of his youngest son, the film is structured in chapters around the destruction of each one of Burnat's cameras. Again, that's Five Broken Cameras, Thursday, December 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, November 25th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Well, after waiting for a verdict, which we all pretty much knew, the outcome of this grand jury. Grand juries, too, let me just say this, in the United States of America are the equivalent of a star chamber. We know so little about what actually goes on. They say that that they have looked at and considered all of the evidence, and that they're the only ones who've considered all of the evidence. And if that's the case, don't expect people to remain calm if they don't have the same facts that you do. The other question that I think is on everyone's mind is the enormous militarized police force, a buildup in and around Ferguson, protecting essentially the good white citizens of St. Louis. That also is evidence of a sort. It's evidence that the outcome of the grand jury was pretty much predetermined. We all pretty much knew what was going to happen. President Obama's remarks sounded rehearsed, to say the very least. And we are going to be speaking today with the Reverend Death M. He's the Assistant Director of Training and Development at PICO, which is an activist community activist organization. Last night, of course, it was faith leaders who were at the forefront of the actions that took place in Ferguson. There was at first a stunned silence. People had hoped for a different outcome. There are a number of different charges, a range of charges that could have brought against Darren Wilson. None of those. That was the astounding thing. It's from very, very mild to increasingly severe charges, any one of which could have perhaps stood up in a court of law. Let's not forget, this is not a trial. This is the outcome of a grand jury determining whether or not there was to be a trial. There are various other pathways now available to the community. We've got a number of people from PICO who may be able to join us today. Dan Handelsman here in Portland, Oregon, of course, has been leading the community here in their response to events in Ferguson since between now and August, and was on the scene last night. Good morning, Dan. Thanks for being with us. Reverend Ditt M. Good morning. Reverend M.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much, first off, for responding to my communication last night, and secondly, of course, for being with us today. I think everybody here in Portland, Oregon, stands in solidarity. There was an action here last night. There will be an action later today. We stand in solidarity with the community in Ferguson, and you, of course, are the Assistant Director of Training and Development for PICO. Your organization does an enormous amount in communities across the country. Alas, not here in Oregon. I looked at the map today, but can you talk a little bit about the community's response to the grand jury verdict? And when people, I think, have no hope and they see no future, if life holds nothing for them, then they aren't afraid.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about how we go about restoring hope in the African American community, particularly young men?
Sure. So I think what's important to point out is that you've had 100 plus days of leadership in the community saying, hang on, we have this grand jury, be peaceful, don't act out, all of the kinds of things that we do to try and suppress folks. And when people then said, okay, we're going to wait and we're going to trust the system and we're going to protest peacefully, and then the system responds with a verdict that essentially is a slap in the face. So to your point, is there nothing that Darren Wilson was guilty of all the charges that could have been brought forward? He wasn't guilty of anything. It feels like it's a continuation of this dominant narrative that Black Lives Don't Matter here in Ferguson and Greater St. Louis.
That it really, I mean, there is no argument there. There can be no argument against that statement. It is absolutely true. It is very clear in the United States of America in 2014 that black lives are less valued than white lives. That is it. That's the fact. That's what we've learned from all of this. And the question now is, how do we go forward? How do we redress the crimes against the African American community? How do we restore trust? Because I think that in the case of Ferguson, trust has been utterly shattered, and around the country, where you work in many states across the nation, how do you see the ripple effect out across America from this terrible decision?
Yeah, I want to answer that in two ways. So let me first say that in communities all across the United States, there are situations in which the African American community is struggling to be noticed and to be seen as human people with law enforcement in the broader system. And so I'm talking to folks in Orange County, talking to folks in Tampa, even in Kansas City across the state, all over, where they're saying, you know, there's a Ferguson in our community, and that's true. And folks have to keep working with it, with their community, to make sure they're moving a different agenda forward. I do want to say this, that there's something very specific about what's happening in Greater St. Louis, particularly in Ferguson, in which the utter disregard for African Americans is something that's palpable. And while I understand that all communities have their issues, there is something here that when you're on the ground, that in which you have decades of oppression, of law enforcement acting in very violent ways towards people, that feels really different to me, given even given all of the difficulties that may exist in other communities. So I want to point that out. And that's not to say that there aren't places that have issues, but it's just to say there's something here. And part of what is getting magnified then is, like, there is something that is, it's catalytic, not only about a movement, but just about this place and how oppression has occurred over time.
And how people have, the white community has chosen not to see this sort of passive-aggressive violence that their actions have done to the black community. When you have 12% people voting, you know, people have given up on the system and don't believe that it in any way, shape, or form works for them. We had an instance of Aaron Campbell, a guy, fellow here in Portland, who was distraught over the death of his brother, came outside his house, the police shot him cold, dead, right coming out the door of his house. He was in tears at the time, I believe, that was reported. And this was a while back. We have a huge problem here in Portland with exactly what we're talking about in Ferguson. 50 cops in the community, 3 of them are African-American. Come on. So what is there anything that can be taken from this, anything positive that we can take from this? What can we use? Because out of anger can be channeled and used in constructive ways. How can the anger in the community be channeled in constructive ways sure. in the aftermath?
So I think the first thing that needs to be acknowledged, and I think this is true for all communities, is that it's young people who need to lead the movement to start to make systemic change. They feel it the most. They're the ones that have the courage to really make the change. A lot of times as adults, we have too much invested in the system, even if it doesn't work for us. Like, we have to think about families and those kinds of things. And these young people have been here to say, we will not tolerate this anymore. So that's the first thing, is I would have communities start to think about, who are the young people whose voices need to be elevated so they can lead in the movement? That's one. Number two, I think, what this kind of tension provokes, as difficult as it is, and I woke up this morning heartbroken for a variety of reasons, and as heartbroken as I am, perhaps the glimmer of hope that I see in this is that we have to have a real conversation that leads to real actions that then say race isn't something just about that we just talk about. It's not something that is in the past, but there's a racial narrative and there's a racial system that gets implemented in each of our communities, and we need to start to do something different, change that dominant narrative, recognize that it's time for people of color to really lead, and then even for white folks who are allies, they need to allow leadership of color to start to enact the change that will happen in an indigenous way, rather than assume that white people have to lead and change as well.
And Pico, this is a lot of what you do is working. You work with young people a lot as the assistant director of training and development with Pico. You're on the front lines of this and listening. I think giving people the right to speak is great, but the African American community, at least in Portland, doesn't feel like they're being heard. The right to be heard is, in this day and age, perhaps more important than the right to speak, because anybody can get a message out there. Anybody's voice can be projected far and wide. But whether the community members of the community are actually being heard is a different story. At least here, you working with youth. Can you tell me what kind of voices that you've had and some of the comments that you listen to all the time in the course of your work?
Sure. I mean, I think your point about the right to be heard is different than the right to speak, because part of it is, so back to your example about voting, is so there is, in the last two municipal elections, a poor African-American turnout at the polls. But I will say that I worked with a group of young people that did get out the vote efforts, everything from door knocking and phone calling. And every door that we got a live person, they're saying, I'm going to go out to vote. And so, again, this starts to elevate the reality that something has to change. And it, and as I'm talking to young people, so the broader narrative is all these young people are rioting. And yet, I want to say, these young people were actually the ones who were knocking on doors saying, do you want to go to vote? In a system that doesn't help them or doesn't, has historically suppressed their voices, in a system that doesn't work for them, they're recognizing that there is a broader, deeper narrative and change effort that they have to be a part of it, that they need to move from the streets to develop a deeper analysis, and they're doing those kinds of things.
Reverend, and thank you so much. We're out of time here. But I do thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for your work and the community. Our prayers go out to you, everyone, and we stand in solidarity with your work. This has been at Cascadia for Tuesday, November 25th, 2014. Janet Allison engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOOM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Coming up next this morning, we are going to hear a series of reactions to the announcement last night that the Ferguson grand jury will